Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now, powered by our friends at Twin Peaks. Happy hour is going on right now. I get powered through a 29-degree man-sized draft beer right now. Premium cocktail served over ice balls. Great selection of bourbons, tequilas. They got that as well, plus TVs everywhere. It is your game-watching headquarters. Got NBA Finals going on right now. That's always a great time to get together with your buds. And head over and watch some games at Twin Peaks. Made from scratch menu, yes. And, of course, scenic views all at Twin Peaks. We've got Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals going on, and the UEFA Champions League Finals coming up on June the 10th, plus National Bourbon Day on June 14th. Always a great reason to get together with friends and celebrate over at Twin Peaks, Independence, Olathe, and in the Northland, right there in the Boardwalk Shops. You can go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com to find more information. Biggest story of the day, by the way, you need to know Tom Fornelli, talking some college football, is coming up in our next segment. Biggest story today, drop what, this morning?
Yes.
The PGA Tour, the DP Tour, DP World Tour.
Yeah.
That could go in a lot of directions, by the way.
It could.
Which is the European Golf Tour, is what it is.
Yep.
Don't, it, as Will Harris, he hears DP and thinks, hey,
I eat a little douche 23 tray.
Flavors.
Little douche
Not
tray.
That.
I wasn't referencing Dr.
I know you
Pepper.
Weren't.
He was trying to go another direction.
Yeah, but well done on your part.
Yeah.
The PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the LIV Golf League have agreed to unify and move forward in a larger commercial business. The deal between the tours and Saudi Arabia's public investment fund was reached without the knowledge of many PGA Tour members and LIV Golf players and agents. So the guy's out front. The guy's taking all the grief, taking all the heat for going to the LIV Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And Rory McIlroy and others that are standing out front throwing stones at those players and defending the PGA left high and dry as they all decide, no, let's live in harmony here as one golf association.
Yeah, said one PGA Tour player reached by ESPN, no effing way.
Had no idea it was coming.
We talked, and I know we all decided we're probably several years away from this, but we brought up examples of them doing this with other team leagues. I will say I think a huge among the many roadblocks, I think, would be the players' associations. I think golf, the PGA had an opportunity to do this because there's no union that would have any power to say no to it.
But, man.
But again, if you buy the top 100 players of that player association.
Well, by the way, and if you were pissed at the PGA, which guys like Phil Mickelson were, you had a place to go. You had the LIV Tour.
Yeah.
And now where are you going to go?
That's a good point.
I'll go play in your. You go play. There's an Asian tour. You can go play in Asia. They're not in this mix.
Some comments from Monahan. I can forget his first name, the PGA Tour.
Shane?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm throwing a dart.
Bob Berry says, it doesn't appear the LIV, the LIV model of today, will be in place next year. Asked specifically if LIV would run concurrent events next year, Monahan said on a conference call, I can't see that scenario. Said he hasn't studied everything about LIV and that will soon take place. He also said, due to the sensitive nature, only two close people on the PGA board knew, and that since it has still to be voted on, Tiger and Roy were not made aware of it until the last minute.
Tiger Woods, some people said $700 million he turned down to go to the LIV Tour. I mean, it's shocking. I mean, it seems like it's just a handful of people that decided this is how it's going to be, that all of golf is now run by just a handful of people, some of which are in Saudi Arabia. Okay.
So the Saudis will now run the PGA Tour.
Let's see how it works. The NBA draft is just around the corner. A couple of the local kids hoping to hear their name, Jalen Wilson and Keontae Johnson, Wilson of Kansas, Johnson of K-State. They were at the Warriors pre-draft camp.
mm-hmm. right? And had a chance to have some comments. First of all, Jalen Wilson talking about what kind of player he is. He was asked what he wants to show teams.
Just a guy that's versatile. I want to be a guy that can rebound at a high level, defend many positions, and knock down open shots. Being a guy that you can rely on to guard different positions, and when the time comes to make the shot, make the shot.
Kenny?
Make the shot or guard the positions?
Yes.
I mean, I think he can guard the positions. I don't know. I wonder how the really uber quick wings are going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays high level college, you know, conference
sure.
player of the year caliber college basketball. He's athletic, but the NBA is the best of the best.
Yeah.
Now, Duncan Robinson, you can play good team. Larry Bird played small forward and couldn't move at all. Duncan Robinson plays. I mean, you don't have to be the most athletic. You got to play good team defense, good position defense. But you really need to either be able to drain the shot or guard your opponent.
And yeah, and with the defense, there's some guys that the way they move, the best way I can explain it is it almost looks like their muscles or ligaments must be wound tighter than the average human. It really is incredible.
Springy.
And I never saw that with Jalen.
Yeah, he didn't there are a handful of guys like Marcus Camby and Antonio McDice and, you know, LeBron early on, even now to a degree, that are just like bouncy. You know, just, mm-hmm. Chris Webber just exploded off the floor. It's like he almost didn't jump. It's like a rocket was under his feet. Jalen hasn't been that kind of athlete. But I think he's got NBA tools. Does he have NBA skills? Something we talked about earlier about the baseball side of things. Another one from Jalen Wilson, Bill Self getting him ready for the NBA, the topic of discussion. Was asked if Bill Self ever talked to him about things that he needed specifically to improve to get to the NBA.
Yeah, I think a lot of times college obviously isn't as fast as the NBA, and he was never a guy that let me settle. You know, he may say you may get away with it now in college, but at the next level, guys are going to be there. Guys are going to be jumping higher. All those different things, and that's why I always, say I had an advantage of having one of the best coaches of all time coaching, because those are things you learn every single day, and I just used my opportunity with him for my 4 years and learn as much as possible, and like you said, him being able to coach me on and off the floor and show me different things that not a lot of eyes can see like his was a great advantage I had.
Last year for Bill Self, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, about a steal a game, half a block a game, shot 43% from the field, 337 from 3. That, if he doesn't get drafted, that's going to be why.
Yeah.
Is that those numbers aren't quite where you'd like them to be. Keontae Johnson of K-State at the same camp, and, of course, talking to the media, and shooting the basketball, a subject with Keontae Johnson as well. He did a lot of his damage in near the rim. His shooting numbers, by the way, last year, 52% overall, 51.6 from the field, 405 from three-point range was what he shot. The number of threes, though, he was last year at K-State, 47 of 116. So he wasn't afraid to let it fly. Answering questions about that, he said he does want teams to know, yeah, he can shoot it.
Yeah, shooting is definitely a thing I'm trying to show teams. A lot of teams haven't shot a lot of three, so just going out there showing reps that I'm comfortable shooting a three, catch, shoot off the dribble.
You did shoot over 40% from three-point range last year. How much of that part of the game for you has grown in the last year?
It's grown a lot because at Florida, I didn't take as many threes, so I feel like at K-State, Coach Tane done a great job of letting me showcase me playing on the wing more, getting more open shots. A lot of plays just ran through me this year, so I got to showcase more than what I did at Florida, but I feel like this year I showed that I can catch and shoot, do something off the dribble, and do it at a high rate.
Better shot than I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't, I was a little bit surprised when I saw that number, that it was that high for him. Forward guard, where does he play? He was asked if he's more comfortable using his strength in the backcourt or quickness in the front court.
I said I'm getting more comfortable using my quickness, just knowing when to attack a big and when to attack a guard, just reading the defense better. I feel like going to K-State, watching film a lot with Coach Perry and Coach Tane helped me see the defense. So just going out there trying to carry it over to today's workout.
He won't. I mean, he clearly had advantages in both of those at the college level. That's going to be minimized greatly at the pro level, particularly on the strength and the quickness to go around, I think, in the post. I'm not sure where I think he lines up better.
Barefoot, how tall is Keontae Johnson?
I think he's listed at 6'6". I'd guess he's probably, I always figure, an inch and a half.
No, don't look. Oh. I have it. Oh. I'm asking you. I'm quizzing you.
No, I was trying to see what he was listed at to get an idea.
Six, he said it's 6'6".
Yeah. He is? Yeah, then I'd say six in the 6'4 range.
Jalen Wilson, how tall is he?
6'5 and a half.
He's listed like 6'8".
Yeah, he's listed at 6'8".
No, yeah, I'd say 6'5", 6'6", maybe.
What do you want to say?
6'6".
6'6", even?
6'5".
Even, yeah.
Keontae Johnson came in at 6'4", and Jalen Wilson came in at 6'5" and a half.
Wow.
That's not uncommon, though.
No. I mean that's every. He's going up against guys that are this height. No, they're not that high either. You know?
But I'm going to tell you, like, Jalen Wilson's wingspan, 8'3" and a half. All right, I'm going to give you one of the guys that I loved and has ended up being a tremendous player in the league. Combine measurements. What do you think? Let me see if I can get. If he's in this, this should be it. We got a wingspan here on this guy. How do they sort this? Here he is. What do you suppose the wingspan is for Jalen Wilson?
Didn't you just say what the wingspan was with Wilson?
No, I told you his height.
Oh.
Like, didn't you just say it was 8'3"?
You said it was 8'3".
Oh, I did?
Yeah. I'm going to say 8'3".
I'm going to guess 8'3".
No, it's actually not. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's his standing reach, 8'3" and a half. What do you think his wingspan is?
7'10".
6'8". Give you an example. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who's been a tremendous player, measured barefoot 6'4" and a half, 6'11" and a half. 3.5 inches longer. And Jalen Wilson's not playing back at the point.
Standing reaches up in the air, like 7'10". That would have been ridiculous. That'd be crazy if he had an 8-foot wingspan at 6'4" and a half.
One of the most traumatic calls for KU fans and one of the best calls for you, Sarin, was, Jim, it's not the height, it's the length. Which is what was said about Hakeem Warrick from Billy Packer.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. All right, one more from Keontae Johnson. Of course, one of the things we know has been his heart issue. A lot of conversation about that. He was cleared medically. I think last week we had that as a story. Johnson was asked if he gets tired of talking about his heart issue.
Yeah, it's something I always got to deal with. It's one of my stories to tell. And like, the more people ask, the more I get comfortable telling them. I'm never tired of telling them. It's inspirational to people. So just when people ask me, I'm willing to tell them everything. Just never give up, man. A lot of people say I'm an inspiration to them. So,
how good did it feel to have that full clearance pretty recently, though, and kind of have that checked off your box for NBA teams too, to go, hey, I'm good to go. Let's play ball now.
It was real. Like, from my shoulder drop, it was a good birthday present for me. So, I mean, I really can't complain about it. It was just blessed to finally get cleared and finally to go ahead and showcase the teams what I'm capable of doing.
Very easy to guy to root for.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The two mock drafts that I've seen that go two rounds deep that I like are reputable. They're 41 and 43 for Keontae Johnson, 39 and 48. There's some separation on Jalen Wilson, but both of them before the first half, it would appear, of the second round is where they're projected to go.
I will tell you, once you get into the second round, crapshoot.
Yes.
Crapshoot. Some NFL news. Bills confirmed that safety DeMar Hamlin was a full participant in their OTA practice today. Helmet on, took place in drills, everything. Of course, after his, of course, cardiac arrest. On the field in Cincinnati, but now practicing in full for the Buffalo Bills.
Pretty cool.
Two Browns players were robbed at gunpoint by six masked men, according to a police report. A team source confirmed that the two players were cornerback Greg Newsome II and D-tackle Perrion Winfrey, neither harmed during the incident. And Titans running back Derrick Henry said on Tuesday that he has worked to forge a relationship with new general manager Ron Carthon and is not worried about reportedly being shopped around by the Titans in March. Carthon denied shopping the Pro Bowl running back in April, but rumors persist that he's available. What would you give for Derrick Henry?
Not as much as a lot of fans.
Kansas City might. Probably not going to fit here, yeah. But
well, I mean, for even regardless of what team I was, I mean,
Pittsburgh,
so many miles on the tires, and those tires are strong, but just so many miles. I can't think of what would be a approximate value, but whatever the baseline of what people would give for him, I'd give less.
Baseball news: Jacob DeGrom undergoing Tommy John surgery to repair a tear in his UCL. DeGrom 2-0 with a 2.67 ERA and 6 starts this year for Texas. Figure he's not pitched since April 28th, so they've been trying to let it calm down. Won't calm down. They're going to go for the Tommy John surgery now. 12 months. We're talking about second half of next year. They're going to be a year and a half into his five-year, $185 million contract, and he will have thrown 30 innings after a year and a half. Royals back at it tonight after a disappointing great start for the Royals, yeah. But disappointing finish to last night's game. Royals at Marlins, 540. Zach Greinke, 1-5 with a 4.19 versus Jesus Luzardo for the Marlins. Miami, minus 165. You can get Zach Greinke. And the one or fewer runs that the Royals will give him on the line at plus 140. We talk college football with Tom Fornelli next. You listen to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB every Tuesday in the 5 o'clock hour. We talk some college football. For the most part, get off our back if for some reason we can't get it scheduled, for crying out loud. Tom Fornelli with us to talk college football. Does a great job on the Cover 3 podcast on CBS Sports. He's brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in every life, playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers that walk-in care right there at 435 and all. It's in Overland Park, folks. Open week. Days 8 to 7. Saturdays, it's 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can learn more right now. KansasHealthSystem.com/orthopedics. Sprains, strains, fractures, joint injuries. You can get in and out fast. A couple of folks, my wife being one of them, less than 30 minutes. In and out, seeing the experts you need to see without an appointment. Take advantage of it right now at 435 and all. We welcome Tom to the program. Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, one of the highlights of my summer always and where I start feeling like we're getting back into the next college football season is when you guys put out that top coaching rankings, or I guess the coaching rankings for all the Power Fives, and then you discuss it on the Cover 3. It just brings a smile to my face to know we're getting back to college football. And I always enjoy the discussion, and I always like to know that, you know, you're out there writing the blurbs for it and taking the crap. You know, that's yes. Just makes me feel better.
It is my lot in life. It's an annual tradition. I'm with you. Like, I used to actually dread the post because I knew what would be coming my way, but now it's actually just kind of a twisted, perverse way. I look forward to it. I look forward to people yelling at me about where somebody I work with voted their coach.
Yeah. And you talk about it on the podcast. It's plain as English in the write-up. I guess people just scroll to their team, see something, don't like the ranking, scroll back up to who wrote it, and boom, you get it. You know, there's no consuming of anything else. So, you know, I would think people would turn the corner at some point. But let's criticize you for what you have done or celebrate you for what you've done. Where did you have Eli Drinkwitz compared to the 51 where everybody came in?
He was at 51 overall. I had him at 47, so I was pretty much on line with what most people had there. I felt like, you know, there hasn't really been the growth that you're looking for since he took over. Like, there's been a couple changes he's made. You know, he's attempted to get stuff going, but the results really haven't been there. So I don't have much of a problem with the process that he's been using at all, but it's just at some point, and I know it's difficult playing in the SEC, but you look around, like Josh Heupel, like obviously Tennessee has more, you know, as far as history and resources, it's got more in the SEC than Missouri does at the moment. But Josh Heupel comes in, kind of overhauls things quickly. You know, he's seen as like an offensive play caller, kind of wunderkind guy. And we saw the results last year. Tennessee has its best year in God knows how long, probably 20-something years, you know, and they had the results. And you look at Eli coming in for Mizzou, and no, I'm not expecting the Tigers to be winning 10 games, 11 games. They're competing with Georgia. But I wasn't expecting that from Tennessee. So when you see Missouri kind of just, you know, putting around with, you know, winning 7 games, getting blown out by teams that it should, you know, that just like when he plays the better teams in the conference, like that gap is so evident. And it's like at some point you need to start closing the gap. Even if you're not winning the game, I need to feel like you've got a shot to at least compete. And I don't get that sense. Like, I think Missouri is capable of beating the teams it's on a level with or better than, but I feel like there are still too many teams in that conference where when you're entering this part of his time with the Tigers, you want to see them taking that step forward, being able to compete with the teams that are quote-unquote better than they are, and I just haven't seen it. So it's hard for me to really rank him any higher than where I did, and I think that overall, I mean, I feel like we kind of got this one right. I don't think there's much of an argument against it.
Yeah, I would agree. A couple things. One, they would like a 7-win season. 5-5. Pandemic year, 6-7 is what they put together there. But yeah, it could have been a 7-win season if he'd win the bowl games. And is it as simple as, you know, I know one of your conversations you guys had on the podcast, Bud Elliott was talking about how, you know, the big disappointment he saw for Nebraska was they'd hired the OC from South Carolina, who knew Rule very well. And he's like, listen, no quarterback's really achieved under that guy. And you guys, that was a really interesting discussion, I thought. But, like, that's the discussion we have here around Missouri. And he being Eli Drinkwitz, bring in an offensive coordinator. Is everything, to me, it looks like everything's right. You know, the recruiting, I think, is better. 2 years ago, he had a really good ranking. I think overall the recruiting is better. He's doing a fine job in the state. He's just not gotten it right at quarterback yet. Like, how much of the equation is that for him, and how much more is it for him and anyone coaching at one of the schools that's not one of the traditional powers in a league like the SEC?
Oh, it's the quarterback is a huge thing for anybody. I mean, whether, like you said, whether you're at a national powerhouse competing for a national title, like we've seen with Georgia. Now, I'm a big Stetson Bennett fan, but I'm not going to sit here and say Stetson Bennett is a prototype quarterback. He's not the elite blue chip kind of prospect. So when Georgia has the kind of talent and roster construction that it has, you can win national titles with Stetson Bennett. You put Stetson Bennett at Mizzou, you've got yourself a good quarterback, you're going to go to a bowl game, but you're not going to be competing for an SEC title with him simply because you do not have that caliber of player surrounding him. So I think that if you're Drinkwitz, you don't have to get the five-star blue chip guy. You've just got to get at somebody who fits in your system and do a better job of putting guys around him. Now, you get with Luther Deferred, and you had a really highly rated receiver who, you know, hasn't really broken through yet. But I feel like we've been so spoiled in recent years with highly rated receivers, like particularly at Ohio State, where they come in as freshmen and they ball out immediately. But I think that is still the exception to the rule. I still think that you usually see a guy like that, no matter how talented he is, he takes 2 or 3 years to really reach his full potential at the college level, especially with how simplistic a lot of the offenses that they're playing in high school. Like, they come in and they've got to learn a whole lot. They've got to learn about route running. It's incredible the stuff that these kids are being, you know, taught now. So I still think you have that talent, but you do need to have a quarterback who can fit in the system. And we have seen, like you said, he's gone through different guys, whether it was, you know, Brady Cook, Connor Bazelak. It's you need somebody to not only have a click, but you also probably have to give them some time to develop. Now, Bazelak, I had high hopes for. Like, I remember when he first showed up and I saw him as a freshman, like, there were obviously things that he needed to work out, things he needed to grow, and things he needed to improve on. And I thought if that happened, this was going to be a guy who was going to be able to win some games in the SEC. That didn't happen. He kind of just, you know, plateaued, moved on to Indiana, and now you're with Cook, and you're hoping that you can do the same kind of stuff. But there's no secret to it. There's no magic formula. It's just, if you don't have a quarterback, I don't care who you are, you're not going to last round. You're not going to last very long, and you're not going to win a whole lot of games. So if Mizzou has a breakthrough at QB, magically, you're going to see Mizzou win more games. It's just that simple.
Look into your crystal ball. What's his number next year? Where does he rank next year? Which is kind of like we're taking a pulse on what you think they're going to be this year.
You know, you look at the schedule this year, and Kansas State is going to be a tough game because Kansas State, you know, they won the Big 12 last year, and they might be the best team in the Big 12 again this year. I hate when you get Vanderbilt on the road, but I also kind of like it because road games are more difficult on their own. So if you can get a beatable team on the road, that makes the road game a little more beatable, and that means you're playing a better team at home, and maybe that makes that game, like whether it's you want to look at Tennessee or Florida late in the season, that's quote-unquote more winnable. So it's not the most difficult schedule, honestly, from top to bottom. You start with South Dakota, Middle Tennessee, Kansas State, get Memphis, and once you get to the SEC, you've got that road game against Vandy, you've got the road game against Kentucky. Georgia, you don't even, you know, whatever. That's going to be what that is. That is probably going to be a very painful Saturday. And then you finish on the road with Arkansas. At home, you've got Tennessee, Florida, South Carolina, LSU. You can make some noise with that schedule. It's not the most impossible, difficult thing. So if he can get to, if he sticks at seven wins, he's probably going to stick again in the 50s, probably where he was this year. If he can get to eight wins, though, I would think he probably climbs up into the top 40, just because you tend to see, especially with my fellow voters, an SEC coach who has a good season. Like, recency bias always has an impact on these things, but also so does the conference. So if you win eight games in the SEC, suddenly become like a top 10 coach in the eyes of some people. Like, I was making fun of my fellow voters because you looked at Lane Kiffin, who won fewer games last year than he did the year before, and he climbed in our rankings, and I didn't understand what had happened, what had changed to make Lane Kiffin a better coach, because it certainly wasn't winning more games. His team had a worse season. So I would say he'll be probably 45. That's my prediction.
Okay, okay. And that's a pretty good indicator, you know, like I said, of where you think things are going there. Let's talk a little bit about Lance Leipold at 23. He is kind of the opposite. Maybe still a lot of work to be done on the rest of the team, but he seems to have been able to get the quarterback spot right. Played two different ones, guys that nobody else seemed to want. Les Miles didn't even want Jalen Daniels himself. He passed him over while he was there. And both of them played fantastically, almost identically, between Bean and Daniels. But what's your assessment of Leipold and the job he's done and the job he can do?
I mean, he won a bunch of games at Kansas. That's not exactly the easiest thing to do, given the history of the program. It's like, so what, they started 5-0, and then they finished. They didn't have as strong of a finish, but the Jalen Daniels injury obviously played a role in that. But like, if you look at Leipold before he got to Kansas, when he was at Wisconsin-Whitewater, he won a bunch of games. When he went to Buffalo, he took over a program that really had no past. It was like starting from scratch at the FBS level in the, you know, in the MAC, which isn't the most difficult conference, but still, considering the lack of resources that they had, he comes in and he essentially builds that program to where they're competing for MAC titles, they're going to bowl games, they're producing NFL draft picks. So that's why I thought he was a brilliant hire for Kansas. And I think what you saw last year was why he was a brilliant hire for Kansas, because he has taken over situations where he doesn't have as many resources as his direct competitors. But he knows he has a blueprint for, you know, putting together a successful football team, and he follows that blueprint, and he gets players to buy in and stick to it. And when you start seeing results like they had last year, it becomes much easier to convince players to buy in and stick with it. So going into this season, I mean, the Big 12 this year is going to be weird. It's going to be hard to predict because obviously you've got the situation with Oklahoma and Texas. It's their last year, but then you've got the newcomers in and everybody's kind of jockeying for position, and you don't know where these new guys are going to fall in. So I think for Kansas, honestly, it's a spot where I think it's, in a weird way, kind of like planting the flag, like letting the Cincinnati's of the world and UCF's and the BYU's and Houston's know that, hey, we might have been the team that was considered the easy win on the schedule in the last few years, or for most of the years when teams look at us, that's you now. We're Kansas, we're looking at you as the easy win. And I think that's just kind of mentally the next step that that program has to take, where it's not just, hey, look at us, we're the Cinderella, we're the darling, we're surprising people by winning games. They need to adopt that mindset of going in and saying, well, we can win this game, and we should win this game, and if we don't win this game, it is going to be a disappointment. So I think that is what we're going to look for. I don't know if Kansas is going to go bowling this year, but I think that what you've seen is just, overall, it is a much more competent football program. And when you look at the schedule, like, Missouri State should be a win. Illinois at home, Illinois is a team that was in a similar situation as Kansas last year, where nobody had high expectations for it, and they had a very good season. They nearly knocked off Michigan, but they also had a terrific defense, and a lot of the key players from that defense are now going to be in the NFL, and they're not back. So early in the season, Illinois might not be as strong as it was last year, so that is a game, if you're Kansas, you can look at and say, we can win this game. A road trip to Nevada, you should win that game. And then you get into the conference play. So you've got a shot to be 3-0 again for the second year in a row. Getting into a Big 12 conference schedule where you get Oklahoma at home and Texas on the road. But other than that, there's really not a game on there where you look at it and say, oh, Kansas has no shot in hell of winning that game. There's a bunch of teams on that schedule where you look at it and say, Kansas can beat them. If they play well, if they don't make mistakes, they can beat them. So my expectation for Kansas is to be, you know, competing for a bowl spot this year. Might not get there, but I feel like if they win five games, it's not what I would call success, but it's what I would call the expectation. And I think if Lance Leipold kind of shows that, hey, he's built that kind of floor with the Jayhawks, I would guess in our rankings he will probably fall, because some people are probably going to have too high of an expectation for it. They're going to say, can't keep him in the top 25. He's posted a 5-win season. But I think for me, it would just further solidify his status and his credibility for what he's done.
Yeah, I agree. Look down the road. Will Wisconsin and Nebraska, will either one of them or both of them regret not making a stronger push for him? I know his age, you know, is there, but he had ties to both programs, and I think that was also part of what drove how fast he got a contract extension. Will either one of those or both of those programs regret not making a stronger play to get him?
I like the hires that both Nebraska and Wisconsin made. But if I were to choose the one that I think would regret it, and I like the Matt Rhule hire. I think Matt Rhule, you know, for all his failures in the NFL at Carolina, he has shown he knows how to put together a winning program at the college level. But Leipold, to me, was just such a natural fit for what Nebraska needs and for what Nebraska hasn't had. Because for too long, Nebraska has relied on the, well, we're Nebraska, and we should be Nebraska, and people should want to come here. And they've been too proud to kind of admit that, hey, since we've moved to the Big Ten, we've had to change what we do, but we haven't actually gone through the process of trying to change anything. We haven't put down a new foundation and tried to build it up. You cannot rely on just being a premier program anymore just because your name is Nebraska. You've got to build the program. You've got to build a culture, which is something I thought Leipold would have been perfect for. That said, I think Matt Rhule has done that same kind of thing. He did it at Temple. He did it at Baylor. It failed for him in the NFL, but I think he could do it for Nebraska. But I would say, just of the two programs, which one I thought was a better fit and made more sense at the time, I would go Nebraska, because I think the Fickell hire for Wisconsin, I am fascinated by it, because we have seen Wisconsin become what it is as a program with a certain identity, and they are trying to change that identity. And I don't know if that is going to work, because it's just there's been history, or there's been plenty of examples of programs, particularly in the Big Ten West, who try to go to kind of like a spread, air it out situation, and it doesn't work. I'm talking about Nebraska being one of them. So it's going to be interesting, but at the same time, I think Luke Fickell is such a good coach and such a very strong recruiter, and I think Wisconsin has kind of gotten its NIL game together. I expect that they will be able to do it and be successful, but it is fascinating. I think that's probably one of the most inspired hires of the offseason, so it's hard for me to say that I think Wisconsin made the mistake going with Fickell over Leipold.
I tend to swing, and we're talking to Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports. Your breakdowns tend to kind of ring a little bit more true with me than some of your cohorts. I'm not one that, like, one great year and I'm ready to, you know, rock you to the top, or one bad year and I'm ready to drop you to the bottom. And Chris Kleiman does not fit either one of those. It hasn't been just one year. He's been good. He's knocked off OU with, Lincoln Riley at the helm. You know, he's had those wins, and now he's got a conference championship. So I certainly expected a big jump. But is 12 just setting him up for a fall back down to the 20s next year?
Yeah, probably, because I don't think Kansas State's going to repeat as conference champion, although I do think they have a legitimate shot at doing so. It's just the quarterback situation to me, I like it. I think it's good, but I don't know if I'm as confident in Will Howard to say, oh, yeah, that team's definitely winning it. But I think, you know, you mentioned what Kleiman has done. He's built such a strong program, and they have the identity. They know who they are, and they know what they're trying to do. That it gives them a very high floor. And you look at the Big 12. Like, I was just looking earlier today, like, you know, the win totals for the season, because we're going to be doing those shows in a couple months. I was doing some prep work for it. Like, Texas and Oklahoma are the highest win totals in the Big 12 at 9.5. And Kansas State's third at 8. So that tells you kind of just what the market expectations are for them. People still think this is going to be one of the better teams in the conference. TCU, they've got a higher win total than the team that, you know, didn't win the conference last year but did reach the national title. title game. So expectations are going to be pretty high, but like kind of what you're getting at with our rankings, when Kansas State wins the Big 12 last year, most of the voters didn't really see it coming. Not many of them were predicting it, although I know we had a few people who were high on Kansas State going into last season. But now those expectations are raised, and if you don't repeat and you fail to live up to them, you will probably get punished for that by our voters. So, yeah, I would probably anticipate him being in the 20s unless they win the Big 12 again. If they win the Big 12 again, he might jump into the top 10. You don't know.
Yeah, and he's, you know, the both Leipold and Klieman are those guys that, you know, were dominant at smaller levels that have come up and been able to keep it going. Does their success foretell a trend in that direction? As far as other hires?
I don't know if it's going to start a trend, but you know, you mentioned those two. Let's not look past Willie Fritz, who had a lot of success at smaller levels, and look what he was able to do with Tulane last year, you know, getting them to the Sugar Bowl, beating USC, and just putting that program in a place nobody expected. There has long been a correlation between whether, no matter what level, coaches who win consistently at any level tend to keep winning consistently. Let's go back, Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly did very good at small schools up in Michigan before he, you know, came into the MAC and then went to Cincinnati and then to Notre Dame and now to LSU. There's always been that kind of correlation. I don't know if it's going to set a trend, though, because the one weird thing that I think is kind of interesting, and this is kind of, you know, same path, but a different, you know, question. Sean Lewis was the coach at Kent State who was a very good head coach, had put together a very promising offense, the kind of profile that for many years would have gotten him a Big Ten job pretty quickly. Instead, he had to leave Kent State to become the offensive coordinator at Colorado, because what we have seen is with the new television money that we have had pumped into this sport and with the arms race going on, like Mel Tucker getting a $95 million deal after having one solid season, the coaches at the Big Ten and the SEC and the Power Five level are making so much money that you can't justify taking a guy like Sean Lewis, who might have been making $800,000 a year at Kent State, and throwing him in a Big Ten school and giving him $7 million a year, because that's what you have to give him if you want to be competitive with your other, the other schools in your conference, and they can't use that against you on the recruiting trail, but you're also paying a guy 10 times as much as he was, and it's hard to justify that. So we're seeing now guys have to go from G5 head coach to P5 coordinator, hoping to get a P5 head coaching job, and that's what makes me think it's probably not going to be a trendsetter for teams to go after the, like, FCS or Division III coaches having success and pumping them into Power 5 jobs, although I think any athletic director who pays attention to some of these things that have happened, it's probably wise to give them a lot more consideration than just going after the hottest coordinator from the team that had a good season last year. So, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a trend. I do think it's a wise approach, though.
Real quick, you have long said that you thought the playoffs going to four teams would be harmful for other teams. Like, everybody thought, oh, good, more teams are going to get in there. You immediately said, because I've listened to you for a long time, it's not how it's going to work. You were proven prophetic. It's only been a handful of teams that have really been able to get a seat at the table. What does 12 do to the playoffs? Do schools like K-State, you know, does the idea, like, okay, yeah, you can get into the 12, but you're not going anywhere? Are the championships going to become more diverse? What do you think 12 does to the to who actually wins the championships and the whether or not we get the same old every year, and now it's just 12 of them?
I think that the most likely outcome is that going to the 12 is going to give more teams access to the playoff, and it's going to lead to coaches getting more raises because they're going to say, I got you to the playoff. I think ultimately, though, it's going to lead to fewer teams capable of winning a national title because, you know, like you could mention last year, and this was brought up, like TCU got to the playoff, got to the title game. The year before, Cincinnati got to the playoff. Well, what happened to them once they got there? Cincinnati got destroyed in its semifinal. TCU gets past Michigan and then gets to the title game against the team, you know, the best team in the country, and gets, it looked like it was playing a different sport. So when you get to the playoff, it's one thing to get there, but to win a national title now in a 12-team playoff, unless you and your conference get one of the byes, you have to beat three elite teams. It is very hard to beat three elite teams. The only teams that are capable of doing it are the top teams, the top two, and maybe some years there will be three teams capable of it. But in any given year, there's usually only one great team. Last year, there was only one great team. It was Georgia, and we saw what it did to TCU in the title game. So I think it's going to provide more access, and it's going to make for better TV ratings and more TV money at the end of the season, because fans can convince themselves that they have a chance at a national title. But the truth is, Georgia's going to win it in the end. Alabama's going to win it at the end. USC is going to win it at the end. Ohio State. The same teams that have always been winning it at the end are now just going to win it more often, because you can't beat them. There's no other teams in the country that can beat teams of that level three times in 3 weeks. So it's just not how it works. It's not, you know, it's, maybe there will be the Cinderella that gets an upset, but then that Cinderella is probably going to get pounded the very next week.
Yeah, like TCU did by Georgia. Time for our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Like we said, if you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life, playing sports, however it might be, University of Kansas Health System offers walk-in care there, 435 and all. NOP, 8 to 7, Monday through Friday. Saturdays, it's 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. All right, I'll start you with this one. Who are the new beasts of the Big 12? It's been OU and Texas. 5, 10 years from now, who are the two programs that are going to be at the top of the Big 12 on a regular basis?
I think TCU is going to be sticking around. I think Kansas State, as long as Klieman's there, is going to be very, very powerful. I think other than that, it's, oh, God. I don't know if there's really, I mean, Oklahoma State, if Gundy's there, is still going to be good. I think Houston, if it ever got its act together, could be good. I don't know if, I know Cincinnati reached the playoff, but I honestly think going to the Big 12 is going to be very, very bad for Cincinnati in the long run.
They're going to look like West Virginia.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe BYU, but I doubt it. So I feel like it's going to be, we're going to see power probably kind of concentrate. As long as Klieman's at Kansas State, they're going to be good. But I would say it's going to be one of the Texas schools, TCU, Houston, maybe Baylor. Texas Tech, probably not. But Joey McGuire is doing such a good job there that I can't rule it out.
All right, and you mentioned I love the totals shows where you go through the win totals on each one of the conferences. We won't hold you to this because you're still doing your prep, but just right now, what's your gut say on our three locals? Let's start with MU. Over or under 6.5?
Under.
Okay. Kansas.
It's a workable schedule, but I just don't love it. Yeah.
Okay. Kansas over or under 5.5.
I love the Jayhawks. I'm going over. I don't know if that's the wisest play, but just gut and heart, over.
K-State 7.5.
Over. They're winning at least 8 games. That team's too good. It's too well coached. It's too good.
I love it. Tom, we love your work. Keep up the great stuff, and we'll keep reading, keep listening on the Cover 3 podcast, and hopefully talk to you again soon.
It's great to be back. Season's almost here.
Looking forward to it. Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports. They do a great job. Cover 3 podcast, a great listen if you're a college football fan. And, of course, you can also check out all their great work at CBSSports.com. The coach rankings are up there. You got to search for them, but it's worth a read. And, you know, like I said, very soon they'll be doing those win totals. We'll get what they all think when it comes to the wins and losses. MU 6.5, KU 5.5, K-State 7.5. Those are their totals.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Burnt end of the hour answer. With a minimum of 1,000 innings, who is the career leader in strikeout to walk ratio? 5.28.
Pedro Martinez.
Nope.
Brett Saberhagen.
Nope.
He never walked anybody.
Nope.
Is it Jacob DeGrom?
It is Jacob DeGrom. I was looking at his stats earlier to see what his numbers were this year, and I noticed, baseball reference, if you are the all-time leader in any career stat, it is highlighted in gold. And I went, I'll be damned. So I checked it, yes.
Right there in front of me.
One of two pitchers since the live ball era to be over 5-1 struck out the walks with at least 1,000 innings. The other, Chris Sale.
Wow.
Those two.
Yeah. Chris Sale, how healthy has he been?
Not particularly healthy.
Yeah. So apparently if you can break it off like that in the strike zone to where they swing and miss that much.
You may have some arm injuries.
You're headed towards arm injuries.
He's thrown about 100 innings the last 3 years.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we gave away there. Joe'sKC.com to send it anywhere in the country. 47th of Mission, 119th at Strangline, and my home Joe's at 117th and Row. Gift cards, great idea for Father's Day. The Kansas City Barbecue Store, also a sensational idea for Father's Day. Those gift cards for Joe's can be used at either one. So he can get some great barbecue or he can get some great stuff to get out and grill for you and the family. It's the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue and Kansas City Barbecue Store.